Hello, everyone, and welcome to Rodane, the podcast where a Dane and a Romanian come together to talk about how the world is on fire, and then we talk about movies. I'm your host, Daniel. I'm a Dane, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, my lovely co-host, Stephen, a Romanian. How are you doing, Stephen?
I'm pretty good, Daniel. I have to say, you are as slicker as cum on a gold tooth.
What?
You're slicker than cum on a gold tooth.
I heard you. I was just questioning why.
I was afraid you didn't understand. What do you mean why? Well, you know, gold is relatively slippery, and then...
Is it?
I don't know. It's a southern expression from the U.S.
Is
it? It is. It's slicker than cum on a gold tooth.
Well, that's southern as shit, anyway.
Wouldn't you know who won the pony?
I've heard that one before, but I've never heard the other one.
Well, you know, you learn something every day.
Indeed.
I mean, most days now you just learn about the new cases of coronavirus, but...
Yeah.
Topical.
It's going up.
It's going up, baby!
Like every good number, it's going up. Wait.
Are we on the stock market? Sell. Buy. Yeah,
let's sell quick. Let's tank this stock. Anyway. If only it was so easy.
If only it was. Well, for some people, it is that easy to get rich, but.
I mean, I actually saw a headline right before we went on of like Jeff Bezos being now richer than ever. Because of course he is. You know, when you have a company that exploits people, especially in times of stress, then yeah.
I also think I read something yesterday that Elon Musk received even more money from the government.
Subsidies?
Yeah, subsidies from the government. Mm. And now he's like even richer than before.
Yeah, obviously.
But he's like on Twitter, he's like criticizing the government and that we don't need these extra packages or whatever, but like
he doesn't need those extra packages. There are actually people out there who needs them, you know. Elon, just go coddle your, like, I don't know, data serial number baby, and then, you know, shut up.
Can I say I really dislike Elon Musk? I really do.
Yeah, same.
Fuck him and his stupid tank car.
Yeah, that car's stupid. That car's...
Anyway, I don't want to get on a whole thing here. I don't want to discourage our audience that probably loves Elon Musk because they're all a bunch of suckers. What?
I'm not going to go into it.
Not going to go into it.
No, I was just thinking, I don't get people who like Elon Musk outside of the, like, oh, he's successful. It's like, sure, but there's a lot of successful people out there. Why does it have to be him?
If, like, I were to take a guess, I imagine he's popular among, I don't want to say, IT nerds.
I mean, yeah.
Because he's pretty much what every IT person dreams of being.
Like an asshole?
Yeah. Well, as in, he is obviously knowledgeable of both engineering and somewhat the IT section of it. But he's at the same time popular and successful and rich and goes on interviews and he's kind of a celebrity and blah, blah, blah. And he kind of dictates the run of the world and he goes to space and all this stupid crap that people that are not me cares about. I don't even care about going to space. Why are we wasting our time going into space?
Because, Steven, this world is already on fire. Let's light up a new one.
Yeah, let's go to Mars that you can't even survive on it. You spend bajillions of dollars making it barely habitable. What the fuck? What a terrible idea.
I mean, it's a bit inefficient.
Oh, it's a bit inefficient. Look at you. Just because some asshole has a sci-fi fantasy of going to Mars. It's a long-term plan. Here's a long-term plan. How about we fix the world that we live in? Isn't that a good long-term plan?
I mean, probably not as long-term as, you know, habitably living on Mars, but, you know.
Are you telling me that we're not able to get our shit together on this planet, but we're going to be able to do it on a planet that it everything on it is basically built to kill us?
I mean, it depends on who gets to be shipped over, I guess.
Elon Musk.
Yeah, only Elon Musk. And still, it will go to shit.
Yeah. And Jeff Bezingos or whatever.
Bezos.
Bezos.
It's a weird last name, but okay.
Whatever. So how has your week been, Daniel?
Quite uneventful, to be fair. Nothing really.
Interesting.
To say, other than I think the youth has decided that now it's summer holidays, and so now they need to party all night over at the school.
Spring
as
break.
Loud as possible. As loud as possible, and it's great because that means I can't sleep. Thanks, fuckers.
What are you, an old man? Go join the party.
No, I don't want to. Other than that, I've actually been productive. It's been weird. I've been working on the secret project that is not so secret. I don't know, just preparing for the beginning of next month when I'm going to actually record. And yeah, also been writing a little bit, very little bit. What about you, Steven? What have you been doing?
Well, I've been working on my short that I'm hoping to finish by the next week before I leave with my parents on a summer retreat. So I've been working on that, recording and re-recording and editing and then re-recording and then figure out how to do an effect and after effect and blah, blah, blah. All that good stuff. I also been writing my novel. Well, you know, I have to do something in order to ignore the reality of the world around me, you know.
Yeah.
So there's that. But I don't know. Like, I really don't know how to feel about the situation in the world around me anymore, but there you go.
You're at the point of not caring?
Well, not really, but I think it's stupid not to care. I think everybody cares to some degree. But I just think, you know, I need some me time, so I just choose to push it away. Oh yeah, I've seen a documentary that is pretty good. It's called On the Record.
Okay.
It's on HBO Max. It's about the hip hop industry in the, well, it kind of covers old periods, but it's mostly in 90s and early 2000s.
And okay, so it's like the what is it? NWA and
yeah, Lauryn Hill and sort of veers into Kanye West and Usher and those kinds of guys.
Okay. Dre and all those.
I don't know. Dre's a rap. you extremely white man.
Okay, fair enough.
No, but I think there is a distinction between hip-hop and rap.
I mean, as an extremely white man, I'm not going to argue with you.
All right.
I'm also the wrong person to argue with you on that.
But it covers that from the perspective of a woman who was sexually abused in the music industry. And, well, it goes over multiple women that were sexually assaulted in the music industry and how essentially their talent at picking early successes, you know. Company and stuff like that. Like, for example, this lady who's sort of the central piece of the documentary. She, in the latter part of her career, in the early 2000s, was about to sign a young Kanye West, right? And I think also John Legend. So two people that are now huge names, right?
Yeah.
And just because she wasn't willing to sleep with her boss, he didn't consider them for the label at the time. And it's like, and, you know, that's when she quit. Because, like, if I can't get Kanye West signed, then what the fuck am I doing, you know? But it is quite an interesting documentary because, like you, Daniel, I am an extremely white man. And And I don't know that much about the hip hop industry in the US. I did have the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill album growing up on
Okay.
a CD, which is a and it's a quite nice hip hop album. Fun fact, Lauryn Hill has not released another album since then. But
Already peaked.
well, I think she just, I don't know, she still tours and stuff, and from what I've seen, her live concerts are pretty cool. It is quite interesting to see like the creative process that goes into, you know, making hip hop, and you know, like the problem in the African American community is that black men were already labeled as sort of potentially sexually, what is it? What is the word I'm looking for? Like sexually dangerous, you know, by white media, so to speak. You know, you have like, you know, you have Birth of the Nation, and you have all this stuff with depictions of them as being, you know, very sexually aggressive. And apparently that had an effect within the black community of sort of sheltering sexual abuse instead of coming forth with it, because coming forth with it would have, in the minds of white people, validated those ugly stereotypes. So the idea was, even though sexual abuse was happening in some cases, we don't talk about it, that kind of thing, because it would be worse for them in general if this comes out. Until, of course, the Me Too movement and that thing happened, and that sort of allowed, you know, black women to come forth and be okay with it, you know.
And at least know that there are people who want to listen. That's
Yeah, and kind of put it in the proper context, like this doesn't mean that black men are inherently one way or the other, because that
No.
doesn't make any fucking sense. It
No.
just means that within this community, there's sexual abuse the way it exists in every other community.
Yeah.
They kind of mentioned that, oh, you know, people now care about sexual abuse, but it's mostly for other pretty white women kind of thing. You know, and they wanted to bring light to the fact that, you know, this happens to everybody. No, I just wanted to say that it's a good documentary, and I think people should check it out. On the Record, it's called.
I want to check it out. It sounds really good.
And has a lot of really good music in it.
Obviously, like.
Also, I learned a thing, a term that I don't know if I knew before. Maybe I did, and I just forgot about it, which is called the light skin privilege.
Light skin privilege?
Yeah. So,
I've never heard it as a term, but I know the concept.
oh, I whatever concept term. So essentially, it means that if you, it's weird. Like if you can still be considered, I guess, black or African American, right? But because of something like maybe one of your parents is white, or I don't know, just the skin complexion is different, you seem less black than most black people.
Yeah, you have a lighter skin tone, basically.
And this lady, the main lady in the documentary, says that she has light skin privilege, and she said that's be and because of that, when she was working at a record company, she was the one to call for the taxis because she had light skin privilege. Which I thought, like the what is it? The Wu-Tang Clan would be recording at their studio, and she would be the one to call for their taxis and stuff. Which is both horrible in one way, if you think about it, but kind of funny in another way.
Yeah, I think you mentioned about it, sort of Me Too and how people only seem to care about, pretty white women. It made me think of when Terry Crews came forward and
Oh,
said that
yeah.
he had also been sexually assaulted. A lot of, well, let's be fair, mostly men, other men sort of made fun of him because he was, Terry Crews is like a big dude. He's a big muscular dude. And it's like the idea that he could have been sexually assaulted was to them laughable, even though it's kind of horrifying.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. But I just wanted to mention, before I forget, the documentary is actually directed by Kirby Dick, who many, many years ago directed the This Movie Is Not Yet Rated documentary.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that, yeah.
So, yeah, he's back with this one. It's co-directed by him and Amy Zirung. But yeah, it's a very good documentary.
I'll put it on the list.
I'll put it on the list of the section of why is this a genre now? the sexual abuse documentary. This is now a genre in the worst way possible.
Well, yeah, but it also brings light to an actual like culture within our culture. So
of course, like it is very interesting. It's just it is tragic that this is a genre now.
Yeah. But I don't know if you've listened to the Ubisoft scandal that's happening.
Ubisoft?
Yeah, the games company. There has been, over the past few weeks, I would argue, a lot of like allegations coming out against a lot of senior members of Ubisoft's different divisions and how it basically just showcases this massive culture of like... just... yeah, everything from abuse to direct assault to, you know, just being absolute shitheads to, yeah, the whole gamut, basically. And Ubisoft personally is trying to bury this story quite a bit.
Of course.
Of course, because they are selling video games at this moment. Because
hey, here's another copy of Assassin's Creed for free.
Like they actually did a like many other video game companies are doing right now, they're doing online presentations because we're in the like E3 time period, or the time period where E3 would have happened or have happened. And they did their own presentation, and they did a tweet, I think it was a couple of days before it happened, that the presentation would not be about, or would not have anything about, the recent allegations. Which is weird.
Wait,
because
did they declare that they're not going to address it?
Yeah. Like... They said, we're not going to talk about the Christ. Recent allegation in the presentation. But the weird thing is, they said that the reason was it was pre-recorded.
Ah, all right.
So it's like you couldn't edit in a little thing at the beginning or anything? Like.
Yeah, but what would you edit in? Like, this feature presentation contains 20% of rapists. Or something. 20% of the people in this presentation are rapists.
Have the leader of Ubisoft stand up and stand forward and go, we're committed to actually change the... I don't know, some
have the leader of Ubisoft stand up and say, I'm a rapist. But like the problem is like you can't, I don't know, like it seems like the worst thing to even say that, like, oh, we're not gonna address it, instead of just
I mean
putting
the most
out the presentation and saying, you know, whatever.
The most scummy thing about it that I found was that their tweet. So the event was called Ubisoft Forward.
Wait, you keep saying tweet. What's a tweet? A tweet? Is
that
what you're saying?
Tweet. Yeah, oh, on Twitter.
When you say tweet, I hear a D at the end, so I keep thinking you say tweed. Like, what is a tweed?
A tweed.
A tweed. A tweed, lad.
It's the British version of Twitter. You're not supposed to know about it. Uh-huh. So they have been doing a lot of like promotional tweets about this event, and they used a hashtag Ubisoft Forward, but they didn't use that for the announcement that they were not gonna talk about the allegations in the tweet. So they so that if you were searching Ubisoft Forward on Twitter, you wouldn't see any news about the allegations. And they've basically been burying the news cycles of sort of the people who cover video games with like leaks of all the games that they were going to show. So they leaked like the new Far Cry game and things like that, so that if you actually go to some of these news sites and actually search up Ubisoft in the last like couple of weeks, all you see is like new game reveals and very little about the actual allegations.
Of course.
Which is it makes me sick.
I mean, this might be the most I cared about Ubisoft in a decade.
Yeah, but still, like, fuck, that's scummy.
Yeah, it's really scummy. But yeah, there are cases of abuse in the game industry.
Oh yeah, a lot.
Throughout the years. Just look at the entire production cycle of L.A. Noir.
Oh boy. The story of L.A. Noir, that's a...
But yeah, that sucks. It really sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks for the people at the lower level, you know, can you imagine?
Yeah, like...
Or can you imagine somebody who, I don't know, was really into video games and they were just about to start at Ubisoft and then this comes out and is like, fuck.
Or like somebody who you know, starts at Ubisoft as like their first job in the industry and they really, like, let's say they're a really big fan of Ubisoft's game and then they come into a work environment that's just the worst, you know? Like...
Yeah. Which is not to say that, because Ubisoft has a lot of, like a lot of these game studios have a lot of divisions. Like there's Ubisoft Montreal and then there's Ubisoft whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually visited their headquarters in Bucharest because they have a gaming studio there.
Mm.
And I think they worked on some of the Assassin's Creeds there. Jesus Christ. Way to bring the mood down, Daniel.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be the entertainer of this podcast. Everybody comes here to hear about you quipping jokes and stuff.
Wait, what? Anyway, anything else you've been watching, Steven?
You shepherd me, Daniel, towards the YouTube channel Full Gas No Breaks.
Oh, God.
And I've watched all of their videos.
So I got a video in my recommended feed, as you do.
Yeah.
I don't know what's happened to the YouTube algorithm, but the recommended feed is on point. it was called The 4th of July, I think, by a channel called Full Gas No Breaks. And it's basically this dude standing on a beach in like Michigan, I believe, surrounded by a bunch of people who are just like, we don't give a shit, bro. And oh my God.
Like no mask, no protection, no social distancing, just...
Like, it is at once hilarious and horrifying.
I think this is time for the first time we are going to do a reoccurring segment called Steven's Musings.
Okay. Muse on me, Steven.
Oh, that sounds dirty. Don't say that ever again. I was thinking while watching these videos, multiple of them of Americans being embarrassingly disgusting, I was thinking, man, it must be so fun to be this dumb. Because as much as I hated what they were doing, if I was as dumb, and I'm not giving that much credit to myself, I'm not even that smart. That's how dumb these people are. But if I was that dumb, I would be so fucking happy. What's the saying? Ignorance is bliss. Ignorance is bliss. It's true, man. Those guys are having the time of their life suckling beer out of ladies' titties. What is it with... All right. Here's another musing. Another quick one. What is it with guys? And it's mostly guys. I've never seen... I don't know if this is a guy thing or a universal thing. But I mostly saw bros... Like bro dudes do this. Mm-hmm. But what is it with plucking a hole at the bottom of a can and sipping it through the bottom?
Well, you basically inhale it, as far as I know.
You inhale it? I thought you were supposed to drink out of a can.
Yeah, but you're supposed to like down the entire thing.
Yeah, but you don't inhale it for your nose.
No, obviously not.
That's what inhale means.
Well, you can also inhale through your mouth.
Yeah, but you could just say you drink it anyway.
I don't drink beer. I don't party. I'm boring as shit.
Do you pluck holes in your cans and then drink it through the bottom?
No.
Well, why do people do this? I don't understand.
Steven, why do people do anything?
But is it an efficiency thing? Like, do you want to get like every last drop?
I don't think so. I don't think it would be more efficient than, you know, opening the whole build to drink from. I think it's a thing where it's like if you poke a hole at the side in the bottom, you have to drink the entire thing, otherwise it starts pouring out. Because if you put it down, it starts falling out.
So it's like a chug thing.
Yeah. It's like you're forced to drink the entire thing.
Oh, isn't that fun? Forcing yourself to drink. Because you can't down it voluntarily. You got to force yourself anyway.
Yeah.
Right. Shall we get to our main topic?
Yes.
So we decided this fine episode, ladies and gentlemen, to talk about probably the most nerdiest thing on the planet, which is comic books.
I mean, yeah, it's up there. Yeah.
Nah, there's probably nerdier things. Magic the Gathering. That was a cheap shot at Daniel.
I know, Steven. I get it.
I get it, okay. I mean, if it's any consolation, I probably spent as much money on comic books that you did on Magic the Gathering cards. So we both wasted a lot of money.
I think you've wasted more money on comics than I have.
I don't know. I found a lot of them quite cheap. Anyway, comic books. What are they?
What are they?
Well, you see, they're on a piece of paper, and they contain both text and drawings. Imagine that. they usually tell a story, usually. Yeah, that's about it. That's what a comic is.
That is what a comic book is.
There is a cool quote. I sent you a documentary yesterday. I don't know if you had time to watch it. It's by DC Comics. Mm. Well, it's by Warner Bros.
I haven't watched it, so.
It's pretty cool. Of course, it's DC skewed because it's made by them. They have a lot of comic book writers interviewed in the documentary, except for Alan Moore, which they use archival footage from back when they were talking. But they have Neil Gaiman in it, and they have Neil Adams, who was one of the writers of Green Lantern back in the 60s and 70s. And he put it best, which is that, look, if you take the greatest painting of all time and the greatest novel of all time and you mash them together, you get a comic book, which I agree with in theory. It doesn't really work that way most of the time. But I really don't understand, when it kind of bothers me, the public, if you will, the public's hesitation towards reading comic books, since now they're supposed to be bigger than ever, right? With all the explosion of superhero movies and all that, even though I don't really recommend mostly reading superhero comic books. But even then, people, isn't it crazy that now superhero characters are so ubiquitous, right? And still people don't want to read comics.
Yeah.
Or they believe that they're somehow an inferior art form, which they are not.
I think it's just a public perception of comics, you know. It's
my relation with the comic book medium is a long and arduous journey of self-discovery and shame.
Daniel, please put your pants back on.
My pants are on.
I don't know that because we record this remotely, so I can't really confirm that.
Well, I can confirm that my pants are on. You just have to take my word for it.
I don't know about that.
No, my sort of relation with comics started obviously when I was very young, and I started reading. What was the first thing I started reading? Probably something like Donald Duck or something.
Anna San, like the
So DuckTales. In Denmark we have a pretty long tradition of Donald Duck comics. We actually produce them ourselves, and they're sort of allowed to be made by Disney, and we just have a long tradition of doing that. So that's what a lot of people first read. And then there are all these like classic series people read, like, you know, Tintin or Asterix and Obelix, basically all the French comics, because I don't know. Then when I got a bit older, I started reading a bit of Marvel comics, but I mostly read DC.
mostly read Batman comics.
Batman. Yeah, Batman seems to be a gateway drug for a lot of people into comic books.
Yeah. And from Marvel, it was just mostly Spider-Man and then sometimes some X-Men. And then the rest of the Marvel universe could basically go fuck itself.
Oh, whoa.
It didn't exist.
It didn't exist prior to 2 years ago. How do you view them, I guess, is my question.
I just view them like a different medium, in a sense. Kind of like how you have, you know, books is considered a different medium. And then you have film and, you know, just visual medium in general. I was about to say film and TV, but film and TV is kind of the same thing nowadays. It's just the length, basically, that sort of makes them different. But I just see comic as like a different medium to that. I wouldn't go as obnoxious to say it's like it's the midpoint between books and movies. And it's like, no, it's kind of its own thing. Mm-hmm. Like, depending on the people who make it, you can do a lot with it. And also, it depends on what medium it's published in. Like, a lot of comics today are published online, you know, so they use the format of it being online to sort of to different effect, at least, than your traditional paperback issue or something like that.
Yeah. I think as time progressed, it became less about emulating existing genres and sort of more tapping into social issues of the time.
Yeah.
Like, the X-Men were created in the 60s, and they're pretty much a direct metaphor for the civil rights movement, you know?
Yeah, and they've sort of kept that moniker throughout their existence of being just a, well, just, quote-unquote, a representation of sort of minority existence.
Yeah, because they're marginalized for their powers. They're a pre-one-to-one metaphor for marginalized groups, you know, throughout history. And that's sort of where what Marvel contributed to the mainstream comic book spectrum, because DC had all these relatively flawless characters. You know, you had Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman, and they were all these flawless do-gooders, right?
Yeah.
And sort of focus more on how superpowers can actually affect your life. Like, you know, Spider-Man's a teenager. How does he deal with the fact that he's both a teenager and a superhero, and how does that sort of impact his life? Probably that's one of the reasons, at least, why the adaptations, the movie adaptations of the Marvel characters were so successful, is because they're sort of, at their basic format, a much more improved version of DC characters.
In a certain sense, yeah. But I will also say that the sort of the way Marvel does it, by hitting it with more sort of relatable, well, it's more the protagonists that are more relatable, but still having it within that superhero world, mostly works for like X-Men and Spider-Man, and then a couple of like offshoots. But if you go to like Iron Man and stuff, like what was they had to do to him in order to make him relatable? Give him alcoholism. Like, that was Demon in a Bottle, and that was basically it. And
yeah,
you know.
Well, you gotta, I don't know, I think it's an interesting concept to sort of bring a real world issues into a superhero, especially a superhero comic book universe, because by this point the universe of a particular comic book series is so wild that bringing in real world issues can come across quite funny sometimes. But
why deal with like, I don't know, a social issue when Galactus is coming by?
You know? Yeah, somebody's gonna eat a planet.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes it's done right, sometimes it isn't. It depends on the writer.
Yeah.
What these comic books would do is that they would give both a writer and an artist a run on a comic book. It depends whether or not they start with a fresh continuity or not, as in every couple of years, the storylines of each, we're talking about each company, DC and Marvel, their storylines would get so bloated with backstories and references to other backstories and blah, 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 that they would reboot everything. And that's probably when the stories are the strongest, when they start fresh. You know,
Marvel hasn't rebooted as much as DC has, though.
Probably not.
They did one like massive reboot, where they basically just said goodbye to the old universe and was like, "Oh, Ultimate and regular Marvel, you're now one thing."
Yeah, the Secret Wars or whatever it was called.
Yeah, which was pretty good actually.
It was okay. Yeah, it was pretty good.
We're talking about it has Doctor Doom as a god. That was great.
It was pretty good.
Saying Marvel, do it. Do it as a movie.
Also, I think the last time DC did it, we got the Scott Snyder run, right?
Of Batman?
Batman, yeah. And that was...
That was great.
Yeah, it was awesome. I think because independent comics like Image Comics and Dark Horse and all these other imprints, because they don't have the IPs... that they can make more interesting stories. They have to make more interesting stories, more adult-oriented stories, because that's their selling point now. You know, it's not the IP. And actually, by giving chances to artists that are not previously established, they can then, you know, they can hit gold with something, you know, and then create an IP that is really popular. One example is the Walking Dead franchise.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was published by Image Comics, and it was just an independent comic, basically. It was black and white. I think it still is black and white if it still publishes.
Yeah, I think that it's always been black and white.
Yeah, and it became this really successful TV series. You know, I mean, say of it what you will, but it's very popular, right? There's a lot of comic book series that have strong followings that are not superhero comic books. One example that I can think of is Saga.
Oh, yeah.
Saga is crazy popular. And the thing is, the advantage of making it into a comic book, it's almost like you're doing a proof of concept, you know?
Yeah.
Like you're not spending that much money on producing a narrative piece, but if it becomes successful, then all of a sudden you have room to expand into something else. You know, like there are quite a lot of comic book adaptations because I think comic books are such a good proof of concept, you know.
I mean, there are a lot of there are a lot of comics that get published today that are seen as just proof of concepts for TV shows, for instance, Cursed, which we talked about like was last week or last week again.
I think last week, yeah.
Was originally a comic book. I'm basically sitting here thinking, like, how long until we get Saga in some form?
I would love to see Saga.
I know a lot of people would. I haven't personally read Saga yet.
I've read all of it.
Yeah, it's like people love it, so.
Just recently, I think just a couple of days ago, was the 2-year anniversary since the last issue. And the people on the subreddit are still like really hyped for the return. Because the artist and the writer of the saga decided to take a break from it. But they ended on such a huge gut punch that essentially the entire community is shell-shocked. they want more, you know?
We're gonna leave you traumatized.
Like, no.
Crawling back.
But like, some of the characterization, it's a sci-fi book, right? It takes place in outer space and whatever. But some of the characterization of some of the characters in that comic book are some of the best characters that I've seen in fiction, probably. You know, it's just because of the good combination between the script and the visuals, you know? Because that's the advantage of comic books. It has a particular way of showcasing emotion, you know, either through dialogue or through lack of dialogue, you know. And because of its restriction of, obviously nothing is moving because it's all on a page, you know, and there's no active movement, so to speak. Yeah. It has all these unique ways to convey certain things in its through its language, like. How do we there's a probably the best book that I've ever heard of during my university time is Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud, which is a book I 100% recommend. And in that book, he explains a lot of concepts that comic books do different ways than you would think that they're done. And that's how you sort of get an understanding of visual storytelling. Like right now I'm reading Mouse by Art Spiegelman. It's written with a very clear, mature intent. And by the way, this is the only comic book in history to win the Pulitzer Prize. Like, the circumstances of Art Spiegelman all dictate to how this was made. Like, he was a cartoonist for, I believe, New York Times for many years. And he was also of Jewish descent. And his father survived the Holocaust. He wanted to tell his father's story in, you know, the form that Art Spiegelman is familiar with, which is comic book strips. He just told the entire story of his father in comic book form. And it's very, very impressive. Also, because of the fact that, you know, a lot of comic books nowadays are probably done with some sort of digital aid, right? This was done entirely on pencil.
Yeah.
So even though you have characters that, like, the composited shot is still the same, you can tell that everything is still redrawn from scratch. Like, you just have a character sitting on a chair for like two straight panels. Each panel is still drawn from scratch, so they look slightly different.
That's dedication, man.
Yeah, it's very impressive. And the decision in this particular book is that the characters are anthropomorphic animals instead of humans. It's mostly race based. Like the Jews are mice, and the Germans are cats, and the Poles are pigs, and I don't think I've seen any other race. I believe Americans are dogs. I think that makes sense. Because of this visual metaphor, it sort of creates a new level of empathy towards the characters because of the way they act. They don't act as people necessarily. They act sort of as this mixture between what a mouse would act like and what a human would act like. And that adds further to the depth of the story.
Right.
And of course, the story is in itself is amazing, because it's the story of somebody who survived through the Holocaust, an incredible tragedy in their life. And it also has a meta story of Art Spiegelman interviewing his father. That's also in the comic book.
Yeah, it will cut to it very sort of abruptly.
Yeah, I think it's basically the beginning of the end of each chapter starts with that.
It's kind of interesting to look at how sort of the traditional Western superhero comic is made, and then contrast that to how a manga is being made, because mangas usually are also quite long, but they are telling a singular story, so it's just a very, very long singular story, which is kind of funny. Like, a very good example, and one of my favorite mangas, is Noboki Urasawa's Monster. Noboki Urasawa being a very, very, very popular manga artist and manga creator, both in Japan but also in the West. And Monster is one of his, like, most famous ones. And it's how long? Like, my version is like 9 volumes, but they're like 2-in-1s. So mangas usually get published in what is known as a tankobon, which is basically just they get released either weekly or monthly, depending on, you know, what magazine they get published in. And they get released chapter by chapter. And then when a certain amount of chapters have been, you know, published, they release all those chapters in like a collected volume known as a tankobon. And then that then continues until the series is ended, and Monster's like 18 volumes or something. It's pretty long. But it's great.
So you have the whole thing.
Oh yeah.
Jesus Christ.
But you also have things like Akira, which is like 2,000 pages. Like,
Jesus Christ, yeah. I think I saw the entire thing at a used bookstore once, the entire Akira collection. And I was like, I don't have enough shelves to put this in.
I mean, to be fair, I mentioned this before, but I have the box set of Akira,
which is in like, it's six volumes, six very big volumes, and it just basically fills my entire bottom shelf of my bookshelf. It ensures that my bookshelf will never top over, because that thing is just a fucking cement block.
You're never gonna take it out of there, because
if I do, it'll just tip.
It's a load-bearing manga.
No, but there are some really good ones, good mangas out there.
I have seen the anime adaptation of Monster.
I have not seen the anime adaptation of Monster. I'm sort of waiting for a rainy day to watch it, because I've read the manga and I know that the adaptation is pretty faithful, so it's probably great. So
I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. Another really good one that Noguro-san made that unfortunately has never been published in English, so you have to do some stuff in order to find it, is called Billy Bat, which I really love.
But how did you read it then?
People have done fan translations of it.
Oh, right.
The thing is, it's kind of odd that it's not being translated into English, because, again, Noguro-san is very popular and he always sells. Like, his stuff is he's one of the few manga creators that actually gets like new releases of his old stuff. So, for instance, my version of Monster is like a special edition that was just like, okay, we're gonna re-release Monster, but with it as 2-in-1s instead of just regulars. But the Japanese company that published Billy Bat has like two Western subsidiaries that usually handles translation and things like that, and they have both stated that we're not going to translate Billy Bat into English. And I think it has to do with the story, because there are some elements in there that would be like, oh, I get it, but I'm still sad about it.
Mario, is there some elements that are controversial?
I can just say that Walt Disney is the main villain.
Oh, damn.
I mean, it's not Walt Disney, it's like thinly veiled portrayal of Walt Disney.
They portray him as a Nazi?
He is actually a Nazi, yes. What is it he is? This is actually kind of a spoiler, but it's kind of funny. He is sent by Hitler to the US in order to do something. I'm not going to spoil what he's supposed to do, and he ends up becoming basically this reality's version of Walt Disney.
Well, I think you can fill in the blanks to tell who is stopping a English translation of this manga, you know?
Mm-hmm. But it has one of my favorite single chapters in anything, which is Albert Einstein and Adolf Hitler sit on a bench and talk about stuff.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
This comic is great. This comic is batshit crazy, and I love it.
All right, I'm interested.
It's pretty good. Like, if you're not into superheroes or weird mangas about, you know, Walt Disney, then just go to Image and look up what they have. Like, Image has an insanely big catalog of very diverse comics. Like,
yeah, well, because their business model is more geared towards giving opportunities to new writers as opposed to milking their IPs to the ground, you know.
Which reminds me, is Walking Dead still running?
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know either, actually.
I read a couple of volumes way, way back of The Walking Dead. Mm. And then I fell off. And then I realized that by the time I looked it up again, it had as many volumes that I haven't read as many as I have read. And I think by this point, it has tripled that. And so it's just a lot.
Yeah.
It has 32 volumes.
Right.
So I'm like, yeah, exactly. Fuck, Jesus Christ. Well, it's a cash cow, so.
I mean, yeah. Image gotta keep the lights on somehow.
It's not gonna be with Spawn.
I mean, they could get like Alan Moore to do Spawn.
He's not gonna do it, dude.
Oh, if they give him Walking Dead money, he's not gonna do it.
He's not. He's definitely not going to do it then.
No.
You got to trick him into thinking this is a rinky-dink operation. Like, so we have this character Spawn. We found him in a dumpster 20 years ago.
I mean, they basically did, let's be fair.
Spawn. What a 90s character. That character will never be able to be adapted into like a modern audience.
Oh, wait, I'll give it like 5 years.
Well, it's been 20 years since this millennium started, and I still haven't seen anything remotely interesting about Spawn.
Didn't you see the animated series they made?
That was in the 90s.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
It ended when the 90s ended. Like, Spawn ended with the 90s. It's not it's not coming back. I'm pretty sure they're still making the comic, but nobody cares.
Why do I just got an image in my head of like New Year's 1999 or like 2000.
Yeah.
And people are counting down to New Year's, but at Image headquarters, they're just dragging Spawn out behind the shed and shooting him. It's like,
your time has come, boy.
Your time has come, boy. Wasn't there talk about doing a reboot of Spawn, like a series or something?
The guy who created Spawn, he wants to make an R-rated Spawn because the movie that they did in the 90s was PG-13.
And it was shit.
It was okay.
No, it wasn't.
It was fine.
No, it wasn't.
It was all right.
No, it wasn't.
Well, it was okay.
And on that note...
Yeah, but he's trying to make an R-rated version now. And I'm like, nobody cares.
Good luck, I guess.
Yeah, good luck. I guess somebody's going to watch it, but whatever. Moving on. So this is the end of part one. We shall see each other again in part two.